This is Jane McGonigal, the author of Super Better and a big fan of the Psych Tech Podcast. You're listening to Psych Tech Podcast, where you will get the future of psychology and technology.
Welcome to Psych Tech, the psychology and technology podcast. Here with you are Kelly Dunlap and Josue Cardona, ready to dive into this week's episode of Black Mirror, the last episode of Black Mirror called Hated in the Nation. All right, Josue, lay it on me. What did you think?
So this is a bittersweet moment, first of all. Also, it's weird that this week, it's this week's Black Mirror when it came out in October, I think, right? It's okay. That's the way Netflix works now.
Time is all relative, you know?
Yeah. Oh man, I have thoughts and feelings about it being a 90 minute episode and all that. And like I said, it is bittersweet. We won't talk about Black Mirror again for a while, but season 4 is actually not too far away. So I am satisfied with the season in general, and I really like this episode. So
yeah, I really enjoyed it. When I saw that it was as long as it was, I got really excited because who doesn't want more Black Mirror in their life? Although I was a little bit worried because I sometimes Black Mirror can be really uncomfortable, and I wasn't sure if I could be uncomfortable for like 90 minutes.
Yeah.
But it wasn't that kind of episode, so it was okay.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. We'll talk about that.
Or right, maybe my perception is now just horribly skewed.
we'll see. Oh, man. So, Hated in the Nation. The death of a journalist at the center of a social media firestorm leads a veteran detective and her tech-savvy apprentice to a chilling discovery.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun. So, yeah, this... I felt like this one is kind of classic Black Mirror in that there was definitely a twist, but I didn't feel like the twist is as dramatic as other twists were earlier in the season. And again, that might be just I've been so conditioned into Black Mirror world that it's harder and harder to startle me. But the concept being, like you said, a cop, her name is Karen, and she gets a shadow, and her shadow is named Blue. Which is really funny because I know a dog named Blue, and so it was entertaining.
Did you recognize Blue from anywhere, by the way?
I didn't. And then you told me before the podcast, and now my mind is blown.
No. So that's Karen.
Oh, Karen.
Right? So Karen is the lead character from Brave.
Yeah, the voice of Merida.
Yeah. But Blue. No?
No, I didn't. I'm terrible at this.
Oh, so it was driving me crazy the whole episode. It was very distracting. But she is the waif from Game of Thrones.
Oh, no way.
Yes.
You get it? No waif? No waif? No waif. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so we have Merida and the waif. That's setting us up for a good time.
Mm-hmm. And a Jason Sudeikis lookalike. Continue.
Yes. All right, so basically, you know, you start out with this reporter named Joe, and apparently there's some kind of issue that's been going on. From what I gathered, somebody in a wheelchair set themselves on fire to protest disability rights or something along those lines. And the wheelchair martyr, I think, is what they called it. And then this journalist wrote a kind of a scathing review that was highly, highly unpopular. And she seemed to delight in all the negative attention. You know, people on the street would glare at her, and she kept checking her social media mentions, and which what I thought was really funny is the first time they showed it, you know, they were comments like, Joe is the worst person. How can you sleep at night? And I looked at John and said, wow, those are really tame. that was my first thought is those are really, really tame. And then they show her getting a cake. And I have not checked, but I can almost guarantee you that's the same cake company that was used in Shut Up and Dance.
Oh, that's probably – you're probably right. I don't know. I did not confirm.
I didn't confirm, but I looked at it. I was like, you know, knowing these guys, that's probably exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And she gets a cake that says, basically tells her to go die and, you know, all this really horrible stuff that the internet does right now. Like, you don't even need to think about the future for this to be happening. And she's just watching the mentions roll in, and there's this hashtag, you know, hashtag death2, and then it has her name. And she's just kind of like drinking it in along with her wine, just chilling. And they kept focusing on the window. And I'm like, okay, what's happening with the window? Something's going on here. And then she ends up, like, of course, dead.
Yeah. It's a good point that she is. She does seem like she's enjoying it. I had forgotten about that. She even that cake, which is essentially a threat, she just eats it. Thought it was delicious.
It's a cake. That's its job. And I was like, yes, I would totally eat a cake that said Die Kelly. Because, I mean, to be fair, it was like a chocolate torte. It was chocolate frosting, like a chocolate ganache and chocolate cake, and then like a chocolate ganache filling. I would have eaten that cake no matter what it said. It looked amazing.
Yeah, I agree.
And then so enter our hero, Karen. Who is a gritty detective, and she's joined by her shadow, a girl named Blue, who just came over from the digital forensics team. And they go, they check out the house, and they, Blue instantly goes to the computer and starts looking at all the mentions and the hashtags, whereas Karen seems very, very traditional in her approach to the investigation, you know, looking at the body and looking around the crime scene and whatnot. And as their investigation continues, you know, Blue is like really on this digital forensic thing. And Karen kind of poo-poos her a little bit, like saying it's the internet, it's social media. You know, they're going to find a new person to hate tomorrow, which I didn't realize it at the time, but was basically foreshadowing for the rest of the episode.
Yeah. I do like the contrast of, and it is like a strange moment in time, where Blue is representing a generation that's all about social media and understands technology, and Karen is an outgoing generation where, you know, she talks about how she remembers when things weren't that way. But it's like a transition period, because you have technology is definitely more advanced than it is for us today, but it's not that far.
No, like this particular episode, especially up until this point, does not feel at all out of reach. Even the tiny little tech bees they show at the beginning that are pollinating, and there's kind of a cutaway throwaway clip about how this is the second season of the bees pollinating because of the big bee crisis, because all the bees are dead, which is a real current concern. So it kind of hit close to home there. And that made me super suspicious. I'm just going to say, when the opening scene has these mechanical bees, I was looking at that bee going, you're like Chekhov's gun. That's, you know, you are coming back to haunt us later. I know it. I just have no idea how it's going to happen.
I didn't think much of it. I thought of it just as like a point of reference for, hey, this is where technology's at right now. We have nano, or not really nano. They're like just very tiny autonomous drones helping with the environment.
Yeah, I felt the use of the term drone was a wink. a kind of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge from the Black Mirror universe. But anyway, they go on their investigation and they keep digging in. And they – so there's two tracks kind of going simultaneously. They're doing this police investigation, and then they cut away to this – it looks like a daytime talk show scene – and there is the hostess and, what was the name of the artist she had on with her?
The rapper, I don't remember. Oh, Tuft, was it? Tuft, something like that. Tusk.
Tusk, yes.
Yes, there we go.
Yes, so it has a rapper on her show named Tusk, and they're like showing him a video of this kid who wants to be like Tusk, and Tusk
so
is
messed up.
Brutal. He was savage, that right there, and just tore this kid apart. And so, of course, you know, what happens is there's a big media frenzy about, you know, this rapper and how he's a horrible person. And suddenly he starts to get like the death2 hashtag going again. And it ends up that you see him start to like clawed his own skin and he's having some kind of issue. They sedate him, they take him to the hospital. And so you're kind of wondering like, okay, what is going on here? Because this is the theory of what happened to Joe. So you're already kind of getting that thread of tying those two things together. Yep. And they put him in the MRI and that got a little,
you know, well, as can be expected when there's a small robot inside your brain and they turn on a giant magnet right next to
it. Yeah, it just kind of...
As expected.
Kind of sucked the bee, the little drone bee, right out of his eye socket.
Yep.
And killed him.
So. Yeah. And like you said, at this point now we see the trend. There are celebrities that are getting... we really don't know about the hashtag yet, right? It's appearing, right. But they haven't talked about it. We know that they're being hated on, right, by the nation. And they so there's obviously a trend. So by this point, you're like, okay, so the bee definitely killed the first person. The bee got the second person. This is really weird. What's going on? And even though it's a 90-minute episode, I do feel like this actually moved forward pretty quickly.
Yeah, if it moved pretty quick.
Yeah, like you know what's going on pretty fast. It's like, oh, I think the drones are doing it. And they're talking at the company and they're like, no, that's impossible. Nobody. Oh, no, you're right. Yep, absolutely.
And I've got to say, from the moment I saw Blue, I was super suspicious of her. I kept waiting for her to be the bad guy. Maybe it's because she used the waif from Game of Thrones and that was acting up subconsciously in my mind. But she seems to be like this stellar digital forensic scientist. You know, she keeps making breakthrough after breakthrough after breakthrough and allows the team to realize that the hashtag itself is linked to this video, which is like instructional, saying, hey, put hashtag death2 and put the name of the person and include a photo of them. And then that person will die at 5 p.m. And, you know, at first it's like, okay, yeah, whatever. But then they notice that there's a list of who has the most death2 hashtags, and that is the person who's dying. So there is now a direct link between people tweeting death to a person and that person actually dying.
And I do like that she, you know, at the end, we see that like she's still on the case, right? She's on top of everything that's happening. And that does fit in with everything that happened throughout the episode, where she was able to catch every single breadcrumb that this guy was leaving. She was able to keep up, and that's probably why it did feel a little suspicious. I was suspicious of her because of the way she appeared,
right
at the beginning. Karen's like, "Who are you?" It's like, "Oh, I'm Shadow." I was expecting at any moment like she's not real or or she was never assigned to the department, but that none of that played out.
No,
she is actually a hero of the episode.
And one of the most interesting things around this point in the episode is Karen and Blue, they track down one of the people who was using the death2 hashtag for Joe, the reporter. And it turns out she's a school teacher. And the conversation was so awkward, but so familiar. Like, I've heard that conversation a million times of the authority or whomever saying, you tweeted death to somebody. Like, why would you do that? And then the other party going, it was just a bit of fun. It's no big deal. It's just a hashtag. And extremely minimizing what they just did. You know, that the fact that they got caught up in this, you know, thinking it's okay to wish death on somebody because it's just the internet. It's just social media.
Which I think, I don't know for sure, but I think that this episode benefits from being 90 minutes long and perhaps needs to be 90 minutes long, because scenes like that, like you said, they were awkwardly long. They were very real. They were raw and they were realistic. They weren't far from things that are happening right now. And I feel that this episode took its time and allowed us to really think about what was happening in that moment. Mm-hmm. And that happened multiple times throughout the episode. It was like the scene was longer than it. Not that I think it needed to be that long, and you needed all that time to feel that discomfort and see that look on her face and let her keep justifying it. So you could keep going back and forth in your mind. It's like, but well, maybe she, no. Okay.
Yeah. It was intentionally drawn out.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really well done. And So moving along, they discover based because there's a the British version of a secret intelligence agent who's been working the Tusk case steps in and makes himself known to Karen and Blue, and kind of it breaks wide open that, oh, it's the bees that are doing it. They crawl into the brain and they activate this particular part that is the most excruciating part of the brain, and you would do anything to make it stop, which is why the people who have been dying have died or attempted to kill themselves through self-harm, because it's so the pain they're experiencing is so incredibly intolerable. And through all this, they find the third person. They find, you know, who is the next person on the list, because she, I believe she took a picture next to a statue and said something about it. Is that right?
It was a memorial, and she took a picture where she was pretending to pee on it.
Yeah. And so that obviously marked her for death.
It was like a war memorial.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so they're able to track her down, and they're just like racing against the clock, and they take this girl, and they whisk her away to a secret location that they use for like counter agents and whatever. And I think I actually missed a part. I missed the part where they went to see the bees.
Where they went to see the bees. Yeah. Well, I mean, again, it's okay. I kind of mentioned it briefly before when they finally go to the company and how they kind of went through that very quickly, where it wasn't like, oh, well, you know, this is impossible. You're going to have to give me. It was like he immediately noticed, oh, you're right. One of them went offline. Like, that's very suspicious. Something's going on here. And my favorite quote of the episode is there when Karen sees that the drones flying in formation doing the logo in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
And she just stares at it and she says, I never thought I'd see the future, but here I fucking am. It's like, it's such a perfect character moment for Karen.
For her, yeah. So they are in contact with the people who developed the bees and are running the bee company. And then, you know, they obviously are trying to hide this woman away because she's the next one to die. And it feels a lot like 7 days, you know, from The Ring, or like this impending death. And suddenly one bee isn't enough. And you see this huge swarm come at the house. It ignores the secret agent guy who's outside. And it just starts flooding through the keyhole and like chewing through the door and peeking through the windows. And, you know, they keep retreating further and further into the house to try and protect this girl. But there's nothing that can stop these little machine bees. And they come in and they get in through like her nose or her mouth, and she dies. And then they just disappear. You know, Blue and Karen are just standing there, you know, completely unharmed and unaffected. And, you know, they just watch somebody die right in their arms, which I was really, I think, a hard moment for me in the show. Because one, it reminded me a lot of the X-Files episode When Darkness Falls that also features small insects that crawl inside the body, and only they mummify you rather than murder you. So there's this, I think, dramatic moment of there's no place to hide. There is no place secure enough. And it's not just one bee, that they can be mobilized and that somebody really has hacked the system.
Yeah, it is escalating, right? Like, we're following that along. It's like, oh, some like one guy sitting in a car across the street controlled one bee and killed the person. And it's like, nope, the whole swarm, like a whole, I forgot, I don't know if you call them colonies, right? But like a whole bee colony just completely went after one person. So it's obviously escalating. And I think the consequences, right? Like the death scene escalated too, right? Like the first two were nowhere near as intimate, right? Like there were three people there, horrified, you know what's going on. Yeah, like things have escalated at this point.
And so there's this kind of moment of reckoning of like, okay, well, what can we do? If we can't keep anybody safe, what happens next? And, you know, so the next day the clock resets, and apparently is the prime minister, I think, is the appropriate title.
Yeah, I think so. No, I don't think it's the prime minister. I forgot. It's something. It's somebody in government.
Okay. Yeah. That showing my ignorance of British parliamentary knowledge here. But yes, the PM or something along those lines. And he's the target. And so there's this really uncomfortable moment where he's saying, well, let's leak dirt on someone else so they get moved up. Like, dude, that's cold. I mean, I guess I get it. You know, you just realize that nobody's safe, but you're basically throwing somebody else under the bus, which I guess I shouldn't be surprised from a politician.
The government is not a good guy in this episode at all.
The government is rarely a good guy in any Black Mirror.
Again, great Karen quote. It's like, yes, the government is a we know that. What else is new? Continue.
Tell me something I don't know. And so it's at this point they discover who is doing this. They're able to like back hack or whatever it is to discover who is actually controlling the bees, and they get his real name. And apparently all you need to have the bees go after somebody is to do hashtag death to and use their name and their photo. And so this is when I was thinking, you know, I know what they're going to do. They're going to say death to and then the name of the guy who's controlling the swarm and then use bots. Because they had mentioned bots earlier in the show. They're going to use bots to get him to be number one. And that's how this is going to end. The bees are going to turn on their master, so to speak. And that's going to be it. And boy, was I wrong.
So like you thought you were right when the guy actually did that. But then, no, not at all.
Yeah, that's no, like, I was far off.
That's not what happened. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and at this point, we still don't know. Like, we still, at this point, right around that time, right, when the other cop does that, right, he does death to, they know who it is. They saw that, they got the manifesto. He's obviously debating whether or not to do it. And I think that he kind of wanted your outcome, right? Like, he probably, this is one of those great moments where, like, you take the teacher who was like, it's just a game. It doesn't matter. Like, mm-hmm. I don't care. And then you have this person who knows exactly what the consequence will be. And he uses it as a tool to commit harm.
And he does it anyway.
And he does it anyway, right? And so, like, the teacher, right? I mean, I think it's funny that it's even a teacher. Like, you know what cyberbullying does to kids, to people in general, and you're just like, oh, it's just a game. If your student came up to you and was like, oh, yeah, everybody in school is harassing me online, are you going to pat them on the head and say, like, it's just a game, don't worry about it?
And I thought it was a brilliant choice. I think when most people think about either online bullying or cyberbullying, things like that, they're probably imagining, like, a teenage boy. You know, somebody who doesn't know better and is just out to be a problem. But when in reality, like the research has shown again and again that the people who are engaging in these kind of behaviors are 30, 40 somethings, typically male, but not always. So I thought the idea of having someone as innocent as an elementary or even preschool teacher be engaging in that was a really powerful way of showing that everybody can get in on it and that the internet lets you do, you know, it doesn't care who you are.
Yeah, and again, like, and then now it's the cop who is the one putting a death sentence essentially on a person. And now you have two extremes, which are it's just a game, it doesn't matter, and this is going to kill that person, hopefully. And, you know, the actual effects of it, do people know what effects being, you know, being a hater online, just harassing somebody online, sending death threats and insulting people online, does that have an effect? And it's definitely not either of those extremes, but it's that's not a bad spectrum where you're going to find the answer. And it depends. And we, again, like, I think it's one of those, it's a, I really like that this episode does what a few other episodes have done, where the technology that they used here is out of our reach, but something like that could happen. Right, like social media is fantastic and it's a part of our lives, but it could also be very, very dangerous. I mean, like, you could weaponize social media in many different ways. Like, your example of the bot is one way that you could absolutely, you know, like, what kind of damage could you do with something like that? Anyway, but like, so he does that. You think, you know, it's like you can tell, like, he knows it's not right. He knows what the ultimate consequence of that could be, but it's like, it does it anyway. Like, it's like a wish And they're over there talking about the case and finding out where he is. And they go and they find his, like, his hideout, and they find this hard drive. Again, like, Blue is on top of it. She's got everything. And again, it moves pretty fast here, where they load up the hard drive. They have all the information they need to shut everything down. And I mean, for me, it seemed pretty obvious that something like this was going to happen, right? It's like there's, it seems like a trap. And Karen is there to tell us something is not right here. And then Blue finds this file on that hard drive that has what is essentially the MAC address for every phone, right? So it has has all the information that somebody would need to track the location of a phone. And it was 370,000 people, right?
Yeah, a very large number.
Yeah, it was either 370 or 380,000 people. And she starts checking, and it's like, oh yeah, there's the teacher, there's the cop. These are the people who actually used the hashtag. So 370,000 people were using the Death2 hashtag, whether or not they knew. Again, that spectrum, right? You have people on there from, like, it's just a game to this is going to get somebody killed. And there's a lot on both sides, because at this point it's like on the news. Is it an urban legend? And they know that that information is there. And now, when you find that, the reason why Karen is able to suspect that they're the real targets and not the actual celebrities is because of that conversation we saw before, where they have this person of interest, they're talking to her, and she talks about how she was attacked online. And I thought that this scene was pretty important, because, again, it's one of those scenes where it was, they took a long time to let somebody really hit home, you know, let it hit home, really explain how they felt. And she said that it felt, you know, that it was horrible, that it felt like the weather had changed against her, like had gone against her, right? Like everything in the environment was all of a sudden trying to attack her. And that's when she said it felt like a mental illness, which I thought was really weird, like something out of kind of like out of her control, something that was like completely overwhelming, something that she didn't know what to do with. And you see that in the girl who was pretending to pee on the memorial too. Like, she is overwhelmed. She can't believe it. It's not, you know, at that level, like that type of hatred. Again, we saw different versions of it too. We saw Joe, the reporter at the beginning, who was enjoying it, and Tusk didn't really seem to care. But you saw these other people who weren't celebrities who were really, really affected by it. And she's telling this story how it led her to commit suicide. And her friend, who we know is the one who is responsible. Attempted suicide. Yeah. And she, her friend is the one who's responsible for all this. So it didn't make sense at that point. It's like, well, why would he become just like the people who did that to her? Right. That was always kind of strange. So you get that revelation at the end where he's collecting information on every single person who used the hashtag.
Yeah, that was the part I thought was maybe a little heavy-handed. Like, I enjoy the fact that Karen got to have the aha moment, especially since she, throughout the entire episode, had been so anti, not anti-tech, but, you know, much more your old-school, traditional, you know, beat cop type of detective. And I felt like they over-explained it at that point. And I think it could have had more impact if maybe they hadn't hand-fed it so much. But at the end of the day, I mean, the impact was very real when Blue deletes the file as she's told to by the secret super agent spy guy. And there's like a moment of, ah, see, it's all okay. And then, of course, it's not okay. And the bees come, and the next thing you know, they're showing the hearing and talking about how many people died that day. You know, 370,000 people, you know, dead in a day, and like the giant, not silos, but enormous. I don't even know what you would call them. Like hangers. There you go, hangers full of body bags, and you know, Blue and Karen trying to understand or really even just come to terms with what happened.
there was a lot of exposition in this episode, both technical and psychological and emotional, which is, again, why I think it took 90 minutes. I didn't appreciate the technical exposition, but again, I think it's necessary because the amount of detail that they went into to show some things and describe some things, it was almost like, well, we found in focus groups that people don't really know how social media works. And people don't really know how cell phones work or surveillance works. So let's make sure that we explain this in detail so people know, because this is the way it works. It's actually working right now. Mm-hmm. And people don't seem to understand that. And so I think that in that sense, it was like it was an educational component for just to, you know, add more effect to the ending and what was happening. And the other type of exposition, the again, seeing this from so many different people's perspective, I thought was really good because at the end, right? So conclusion, the guy's plan works. His intention all along was to tag all the people who would do something like that to someone else and murder them, murder all of them. And he did it and he got away. But at the end, Blue is on it, just like the rest of the episode, just a couple steps behind him. She's got this. Karen is aware and, you know, fade to black. And it leaves you with a lot. And I think that what it left me the most with, and I have a few questions for you, but what it left me the most with is the idea of consequences, right? Of unforeseen consequences. Like just like the special agent hit that button because he thought that, you know, it's fine. Like this is what needs to happen. We need to do this right now. That other thing that you're saying that could possibly happen, like that's the worst case scenario. That's not going to happen. And he hits the button. Mm-hmm. And everybody else is like, oh. And again, that spectrum of someone finding it funny, someone thinking it's a game, and someone like Joe thinking that it's funny and enjoying it, all the way to someone attempting suicide or being murdered as a result, you don't know what the consequence is going to be, right? Again, that's a pretty broad spectrum, but I think that's to me that was the theme of the episode, the consequences of your actions.
Yeah, the idea that just because you think, oh, it's just a game, or it's just the idea that it's just social media doesn't hold water. You know, as someone who has been on the receiving end of some not great social media interactions, I can definitely attest to, like you said earlier, the idea it feels like the weather changed and that it's almost like a mental illness in that regard. Like it feels like your entire world has just it's just collapsing and turning on you, and no one will help you, and it doesn't matter what you do. It's a really terrible feeling. And so I appreciated that they drove home the idea that, you know, there's no such thing as just fun and games. These are people's lives. It is literally lives on the line, and you need to be aware of that. And what I thought was so interesting is right after this episode, there was something that came up. I can't remember what it was, but I remember thinking I need to remember this for the psych tech. But there was a hashtag that I wanted to tweet about because it was something probably to do with the inauguration. And because of this episode, I didn't do it. I stopped in my tracks and was like, you know, I'm not going to do it. I agree with the sentiments of this hashtag, but it's not constructive. And I just watched an episode about what happens when you do that. So I'm gonna take my lesson. I'm gonna keep it.
And that's a great point. The inauguration is polarizing. But so was Obama's election, right? When he won the first time, I genuinely feared for his life, right? Mm-hmm. I thought, I can't believe this. Like, some people are so angry and so full of hate right now that something bad is going to happen to him, or something bad is going to happen at the inauguration. That was my fear, right? Like, if you're going on that spectrum from it's going to be a party to something's going down, And like I have that feeling again now, because again, it's so polarizing. So many people are so angry, but how many people are willing to actually do something more, right? Like, mm-hmm. how many people are angry, and how many people are willing to commit a violent act? You know, like we talked about recently, I think that most people are not inclined to do anything like that. So I don't think anything's going to happen. But where the technology part here fits in, again, that idea of sending a drone out to do something that maybe you wouldn't do personally.
Right.
Now that changes it, right? Because now we're talking about the horror part of the show is one part the social media, but really it's the surveillance state. It's the Internet of Things being hackable. And right. we know that that's true, right? And what happens, it reminded me, there's an episode of the series Ghost in the Shell Rise, and the entire traffic system, like all cars, once they get on the freeway, they're automatically synced up to this mainframe, and the driving is done automatically, but it's controlled by the freeway. And there was an episode where obviously that thing gets hacked, right? And you know, chaos ensues. And, you know, what happens when we start automating more and more things? That fear of something being hackable is absolutely a problem. And in the episode, you see the government has hacked this environmentally friendly program as a surveillance system, which is, I don't know why they wouldn't, right? And we know that governments and different people have accessed, you know, the computers on your laptop and all sorts of stuff. And that is possible. But what happens when it's not a government organization that can control that? What happens when it's somebody who is that angry online and now has access to, you know, that swarm of bees is like a weapon of mass destruction at this point, right? Because it's exponential, like the effect that it can have. He right. killed 370,000 people without breaking a sweat. And
right.
like you and I now, right? Like we can program things to do what we want them to do, right? Like that is not something that seems completely unrealistic. I mean, obviously there's security. It's harder than, you know, just tapping on a keyboard and making things happen. But the more and more, you know, people are learning to code from an earlier age, it's becoming easier. We can, I recently, I think it was at one of the TechCrunch disrupts, one company was showing off coding by voice. So now you don't have to type it. You just tell it like what you want to do and it'll start doing it, right? There's technology is evolving and it is being democratized, right? The barrier of entry is lower and lower. So what happens when we all have multiple devices in our homes that are potentially a security risk that have different capabilities, including our autonomous vehicles, which Wired did a great piece last year about these hackers hacking into a Tesla autopilot. And so what happens when more and more of us can do that and it's out of the company who created its control or out of the government's control? That's where the horror part, that's where if there's anything that's like resembles a horror movie in this episode, I think it is that.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially when you consider that the developer of the bees didn't want to put in a back door. He wanted it to be a fully contained system, but because he was being funded by the government, they made him put in basically a vulnerability so that they could use it for surveillance. And so, you know, their own hubris is what ended up, you know, allowing a hacker to get hold of those colonies. And I mean, right now, there was an article not that long ago about how the most recent artificial hearts, like pacemakers, can be hacked. Or there was an article a few months ago about a children's toy that connected to the internet that was being hacked and the data was being taken off of that. So, again, the idea that anything that is connected to the internet is safe is, I think we have to come to the realization that there's no such thing.
Or anything digital, period.
Yeah, digital, like, period. That's a good way.
Like the other day there was this report about how on a TV show someone made a comment to Alexa. And sorry, hope that didn't activate anything. And it ended up ordering dollhouses for a whole bunch of people.
Yes, right? I saw that.
So like that counts as like, oh, I kind of like hacked into your account, your system, right? Just by using my voice. And we've never talked about it on the show, but you know, they've demonstrated that they can encode digital information into DNA, right? So that it's like the way that we can transmit information and infiltrate a system is very sci-fi right now. Like, we are not, the possibilities haven't even been explored, like, in mainstream TV, the type of things that we can do. Like, this is basic stuff in this episode, right, compared to what is potentially possible.
Yeah. And so just, I mean, kind of the end of the episode left me curious, because it's alluded to that Blue committed suicide. After not, you know, after feeling like she was responsible for the death of all those people, because she's the one who followed the breadcrumbs and made it possible. And, but, you know, twist within twist, it turns out she's alive and is on the trail of the guy who did the hacking. And the episode ends with her and Karen. There we go. Yeah, I don't know why I saw Katie. And Karen basically agreeing more or less that she was going to go kill him. And so he goes around a corner and she follows, and the episode ends there. I don't know. I felt kind of unsatisfied by that. And I can't put my finger on why.
Good. I think this is the last thing I wanted to talk about. I have a couple questions for you.
Okay.
Did you feel bad for the celebrities who got murdered?
Yes.
Did you feel bad for the 370,000 people who got murdered?
Yes.
Which one did you feel worse for or about?
I don't think I could choose. I mean, I feel it's a loss of life. I think it's awful, no matter who it is. I mean, obviously, losing that many people on that large of a scale is, I would say, a greater tragedy to humankind. Because of just the sheer volume of the loss of life, I guess I could see the argument that the celebrities, you know, they kind of intentionally invoked rage by the way that they acted. They acted in a provocative way, but that brings up the argument that they deserved it, in which I don't think that's true, especially because when you think about all the people wishing death upon them, you could also make the argument that they were asking for it by engaging in such destructive behavior, even if they didn't realize what they were doing. So I don't know. I guess I feel equally for them. And do you have a perspective on that?
Well, I feel like it presented the villain as both a hero and a villain, depending on how you, like, you know, my opinion, very wrong. Right? His motivation, though, is like, his motivation is what could have some people see him as a hero, and probably did, right, in context of the episode, like, oh yeah, like, I'm kind of glad that reporter died, or that guy died, right, because they sucked. And then it reversed that, like, there was this very weird mirror, right, no pun intended, right, where constantly things were being reflected back and forth, and you see things in a different way, where, like you said, like, well, somebody could argue that they were asking for it, or that they deserved it. But could you say the same thing for them? And then do you only feel that way because you know the outcome? Or would it have changed if you didn't know that that would be the outcome? And I think that these are feelings that a lot of people struggle with and will continue to struggle with, right? Like, what kind of penalty are we going to put on somebody who's cyberbullying versus somebody who yells at somebody on the street? Is one worse than the other? What is the potential consequence? Who are you talking to? And, you know, the episode shows us, to one degree or another, the deaths of the celebrities, right, or those victims, but we don't see a single one of the 370,000 people die. It's kind of completely disconnected. Like, we know it happened. We see it as, you know, this ominous red cloud on that screen, but we don't really see anything else happening. And I think that push and pull throughout the episode did something where by the end of the episode, I was kind of, just like you said, I was even keeled. Like, there was like this balance in me where I didn't feel like a profound effect of any of it. And I think that has to do with the degree of exposition and the way it was presented. But the gravity of it was so – it's like that would have been, you know, the worst massacre in forever, right? That would have been a historic tragedy. And yet the way that it happened in the show, and even the way – I don't know, like it, there wasn't this weight to it for me as a viewer. And I've been thinking about this because I was reading an interview and the interviewer was like, meh, like I didn't feel it that much when people died. And Charlie Brooker was like, the writer was like, really? Like, he's like, yeah, I don't know. It's like, it didn't weigh heavily on me. And I didn't feel like I did at the end of White Bear, for example, right? Which is like an unbearable feeling.
Yeah.
And you kind of also have, there's a similar theme there where it's like, well, she deserved it, but nobody deserves that, right? And then, yeah. And she was being tortured. But here it is really like people died. But because of the context and the way it happened, I didn't have like that emotional reaction, which I think is the magic of this episode. I wonder how many people will feel like it was a tragic event or you know, or weighs heavily on them at all versus, you know, just being like, huh, that was interesting.
Oh, you know, over 300,000 people died. No big. You know, that's fine. Yeah. No big deal. It's cool.
Yeah.
What's for dinner, you know?
Yep.
I mean, on one hand, you kind of have to have that mentality because it is just a TV show. But I remember watching the red dots light up and feeling kind of queasy, you know, and sick to my stomach. Just the mental idea of so many people dying, and not just dying, but in agony. And then the view of all the body bags was just really – I mean, it bothered me as Black Mirror tends to do. But I don't think I ever felt – I never felt like with the celebrities, like, oh, yeah, they deserved it. I'm happy they're dead. I was like, oh, that's – man, I'm really I think I summarize it as if looks could kill, but instead of looks, it's tweets. You know, that's kind of my synopsis of this episode is if tweets could kill, this is how it would happen.
Yeah. I mean, I keep thinking back to why did they die, right? And if you consider – this thing was put in place, and over the course of 3 days, your death sentence was to be an ass, right? Was to be a, you know, bad towards other people, to be aggressive or offensive or insulting. And that choice during those 3 days cost you your life. And whoa, you know?
Yeah, just the idea that I think the episode was really good at getting across the idea that you shouldn't be a jerk. Like there are real lives on the line. And so you shouldn't engage in these behaviors. But I certainly don't think that you should die for them either.
Yeah. I mean, again, on the opposite side of that, you never know what the consequence of your actions will be. And
right.
You don't know how someone will react. And I would say that that guy overreacted.
A little bit.
He killed 370,000 plus people.
And three.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's going to be it for this episode of Psych Tech. And of course, that is our last Black Mirror episode too. And
I'm sad. Always, I'm sad about it. But at the same time, I'm looking forward. There's so much to talk about. CES happened. It's been a while. There's a lot to cover.
Yep. So we'll be back with your regularly scheduled program in 2 weeks. So until then, you can, of course, if you have not already, subscribe to us here on Psych Tech and check out our other podcast, Headshots, which is a game specifically about a game. Oh, my goodness. A podcast specifically about games and psychology. And of course, you can check out all the other podcasts in the Geek Therapy Network. So please do. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter. And yeah, we'll see you in 2 weeks. So bye, everybody.
Be nice.
Yes, be nice or else.